Parshas Ve'eschanan, as we know, is Moshe Rabbeinu's plea to try to gain himself access and entry into the land of Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu Ve'eschanan El Hashem, he offered Tav Kuf Tesvav Tfilos, which means 515 subsequent Tfilos, one after the other, trying to petition the Ribono Shel Olam to allow him to enter into Eretz Yisrael. And this is always the week that I try to bring back our focus onto Tfilah, because it's something that the Gemara says is tzarech chizuk tamid. Tefillah is something that we do so often, but because of the fact that we do it so many times a day, we also need to remind ourselves of what tefillah is all about. It's very easy to just consider it as another routine part of our day. So one of the most important aspects of tefillah is that we need to make sure that when we daven, we have kavana. There's a saying, tefillah b'li kavana is kaguf b'li neshama. When you have a tefillah that doesn't have the requisite attention and the understanding to the words that are being said, so what kind of tefillah is that? And in fact, the Rishonim write, the Kolbo, one of the early Rishonim that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch writes, that the same way when one offers a karban, you have to make sure, the Pasuk says in Parashas Tzav, that you're not allowed to have a machshava, chutz lizmano v'chutz limkomo. The Kohen who offers the karban has to have in mind that this is going to be done exactly the way it's supposed to do, and his mind is not allowed to be somewhere else. So too writes the Shulchan Aruch, quoting the Kolbo, we have to make sure that when we daven, we don't have a machshava chutz lizmano, so to speak. Oh, that I'm thinking about my trip in a week from now, or I'm thinking about the vacation I'm going on, or the business meeting that I have to go to, or chutz l'makomo, I shouldn't be thinking about anything else other than what's in front of me. Now, obviously, that's extremely difficult for us to do, but that really is something that we are supposed to aspire towards. So the Kavi Yasher, who's one of the earliest Musar Svarim, his name was Rabbi Aaron Shmuel Kodanover, he lived in the 1600s, passed away in 1676. So he has a beautiful passage where he talks about kavana b'tfila. And he says, it happens to be in the Talmud Yerushalmi, they write that we have to keep our feet together when we daven Shmona Esrei. The Gemara in the Bavli also speaks about it. Ragleim regal yishara, we have to keep our feet together. However, the Yerushalmi has a dispute. Why is it that we keep our feet together? Is it because we're supposed to be like the angels, who have only one leg? And Rav Soloveitchik has a beautiful interpretation to explain what the connection between angels' feet together and our tefillah being a feet together. It's beautiful, not for now. But then there's a second opinion there in the Yerushalmi that the reason we keep our feet together is that we should be like the Kohanim. And explains the Kavi Yasher. What is the difference between being like Malachim and being like Kohanim? Is there a similarity? Is there a difference? And he explains the following. Vinira, de'elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim hem. He says, this is not a dispute. They each want to focus on a different point when one is davening. Number one, hatfila yibimakam hakarban, as we know. Tfila today for us is a substitute for the sacrifices, for karbanas. We don't have the Beis HaMikdash. Al Kanan, therefore, he says, tzarech lasos atzmo ki'ilu hu kohen. We all have to visualize, we all have to imagine as if we are the Kohen who is offering the karban on the Mizbeach. That's what we do as we offer a tefillah today. And just like, says the Kavi Yashar, just like a Kohen will invalidate his karban if his mind is elsewhere, so too we will invalidate our tefillah if our mind is not going to be focused. But then he says, V'lo yomar ha'adam, hiru avera asur davka. Don't think that I'm only saying you're not allowed to think about those thoughts that one is not allowed to think about, but rather he says, afilu hir b'masu matan, I'm in the middle of a very busy day at work, and I take off a couple of minutes to go daven mincha, which is tremendous, it's amazing, and that's why the Gemara says, mincha is something that has such tremendous power, because it's not easy to make it before this man. As mincha, we have meetings during the day, we have things to do, and yet we carve out his man every day to daven mincha. So, a person who's davening then, and he makes time out of his business day to now go ahead and daven mincha, you have to make sure that you clear out all of the hirhurei masa umatan, all the meetings you're in the middle of, all the business dealings you're in the middle of, also need to go to the side. Kitzarech ha'adam lios dugmas ha'malachim. That's where this connection to the angels comes in, that we have to treat ourselves like malachim, meaning, she'ein behem iske olam hazeh. A malach has no worry in the world. A malach is asked to do something, and that's all he focuses on. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him a job, and he does it faithfully. He's a loyal servant. There is no taiva, there is no kina, there is no any reason why a malach would be focusing on anything else. He has nothing else in his existence. And therefore, writes the Kavi Yasher, this is why the Yerushalmi, when it describes the act of tefillah, the Yerushalmi says, on the one hand, you're supposed to consider yourself like a Kohen, because a Kohen also has to be single-mindedly focused on that which is in front of him, not chutz lizmano, not chutz limkomo. And number two, he says, We have to envision ourselves as if we are malachim, with no other worries in the world. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be doing now, and we're supposed to wipe everything else, all other concerns out of the way, because now we are supposed to be focusing only on our tefillah. So there's an amazing comment in the Yerushalmi. For those of us who are feeling bad, it's hard for us as human beings to have kavanah. Don't feel so bad, because the Yerushalmi writes about the Gedolei HaAmoraim. Rav Chiya said that he thinks in his life, Me'olam lo hitzliach lechavin mechal ha'tfilah. Rav Chiya said about himself that he thought throughout the duration of his long life, he never successfully had the proper kavanah throughout the entire duration of tefillah. So if that makes you feel a little better, at least you like Rav Chiya. Rav Chiya also had the same challenge we have. It's not so easy to have kavanah. Now maybe his lack of kavanah was different than our lack of kavanah, but still, the Yerushalmi writes that he had difficulty really focusing on the entirety of tefillah. Shmuel, the famous Shmuel, writes the Yerushalmi, says that during tefillah, sometimes he would catch himself being mona efrochim. He was counting chicken eggs. What are you counting eggs for? You're in the middle of davening. Why is your mind over there? And the answer is, it's very difficult for us to really focus. And says the Yerushalmi there as well, there was another Amor who used to count shuros habinyan. You ever see somebody who's daydreaming in the middle of davening and you think that they're actually counting the bricks? Says the Yerushalmi, one of the Amorim said that about himself. Sometimes I got totally lost. I was totally not focused at all. And I was counting the shuros habinyan. It means I was counting how many bricks there are on each level. So I think the reason why the Yerushalmi shares these stories with us is because the Yerushalmi wants us to understand that it's difficult and it's demanding and it takes a tremendous effort for us to have kavanah during davening. And the same way that we struggle with it, the Gedolei HaAmoraim struggled with the same thing. Tefillah is something that is a major part of our lives. We do it numerous times a day. But at the same time, it's very difficult for us to keep a focus throughout the entire duration of tefillah. I believe I once saw in the Dubna Magid, he has a beautiful mashal, about a kafri echad. I don't know how you translate that exactly, but he says a simpleton who came to a big city, and then one fine evening, he's staying in his hotel and he hears a big commotion outside in the street. Somebody's banging, 3 o'clock in the morning, right in the middle of the town square. Somebody's out there with a big bongo, with a big drum, and he's banging on the drum with a spoon, and everybody's coming out, everybody's running, everybody's screaming. He runs outside and he says, what's happening? Is everything okay? He says, no, there's a fire. So he says, okay. So he says, I'm banging on the drum. This way we'll put out the fire. Okay. So he's watching as this fire, this huge flame is overtaking, engulfing an entire house. And he's watching as the house is going up in flames. Suddenly, in the next 5 minutes, the whole fire goes out. And he's amazed. How could it be? This guy's banging on his drum, and the fire goes out. It's unbelievable. A couple of years go by, and he goes back to his simple village, and a fire breaks out in the middle of the night. He says, everybody stop what you're doing. I know exactly how to put out fires. I was in a big city a number of years ago, and in the middle of the night, there was a fire. And I watched as this home was engulfed in flames. And suddenly, this man came to the middle of the town square with his bongo, with his drum. And he's banging on it with a spoon. And all of a sudden, before you knew it, all the fires were out. It was amazing. It was such a miracle. And that's what I think we should do today as well. And he's standing there in the middle of the street, banging away. And he can't believe it. Nothing's going out. He can't understand what is different from what I'm doing than what he did. And somebody goes over to him. He says, I was also in that city. You missed everything that they were trying to accomplish. All he did by going into the town square with his drum to bang on the bongo in the middle of the square was to catch everyone's attention, to wake everybody up, and to encourage them to come with water and go put the fire out. Obviously, banging on the drum doesn't put the fire out. Banging on the drum is just the way to get everybody's attention that they should put it out. You're going to stand here in the town square and you wonder why the house burnt down? It's because you're not bringing any water. Of course you can't put out a fire with just a drum in the middle of the street. And the same thing writes the Dubna Magid is so often. You look around shul and you see there are individuals, myself included, sometimes you do all the banging on the drum. You go in the middle, slach lanu, and in the siddur it tells you exactly, bend down over here, pick up over here, you should turn this way, turn that way, 3 steps back, 3 steps forward. He says, we're all doing the banging on the drum. We're all doing all these different motions. And we wonder, how come the Ribbono Shel Olam is not answering my tefillah? It's so strange. I have a fire raging, I have a chola in my house, I have a parnasa that I need, I have a shalom bayis that's bothering me, I have all kinds of issues, and I daven every single day. How come the Ribbono Shel Olam is not listening? After all, I bow down by this part of the bracha, I bang my chest at that part of the bracha, I take 3 steps forward here, 3 steps back there. How could it be that after all that I do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not answering, writes the Dubna Magid, you're very similar to that person who doesn't understand that the way to put out a fire is not just banging on the drum. The way to put out the fire is, the banging on the drum is just a way of getting someone's attention. And so too he says, when we clap Slach lanu, when we bow, when we take steps around and we do different things, we stand and we sit and we put our heads down in the middle of davening, all of that is just to arouse us, to inspire us, that now it's time to be mechave, now it's time to think about what it is that we're trying to accomplish, what it is that we're saying. But just the banging on the drum alone obviously will never suffice to put out the actual fire. It's said in the there's a Pinkas HaKehila. There were many communities in Europe that used to have a ledger, and they used to keep all kinds of legends from the community that were written down in this history book, I guess it was. So in the city of Lvov, that was the city where the great Turezov, the Taz, who has a commentary on Shulchan Aruch, that's where he lived. So it is said that in the ledger of the city of Lvov, they had a story that the Taz had a very worn-out talus, and it had holes in it all over the place, and it was yellow, and it was frayed. And they asked him, why do you continue to wear this old talus? All the ladies of the community came together, and they started weaving a new talus together. The Taz, the Rav of the city, should have a real talus. What is he wearing, this old talus from when he got married? And they came and they presented it to the Taz. They were so excited that finally he's going to get himself a new talus. He was never able to afford it. And the Taz said to them, I thank you very much, and I'm very touched by the fact that you all went out of your way to collaborate to make this talus, but I have to say, I'm declining the offer. I want to continue to wear my talus. Why? Said the Taz, because my talus will be made on me. My talus will testify on me that in the end of days, I never had a machshava zara be'emtza hatfila. Writes the Taz, I'm going to keep this talus because I never had my mind wandering anywhere else in the middle of davening, and my talus will testify on me in the end of days that that's the way I acted every single tefillah that I davened. It's an amazing story, and I think a little bit unrealistic for most of us, at least for myself. And therefore, what gives me a little bit of comfort is the Chafetz Chaim, where he says a mashal. Chafetz Chaim in the Shmiras HaLashon says, B'shem Gadol Echad. He doesn't say who the person is, he doesn't identify him. But if the Chafetz Chaim calls him a Gadol Echad, it means you can be sure he was someone special. So the Chafetz Chaim writes the following mashal. He says, there's a young girl who was sent out by her family to go and sell apples in the market. And this young girl, unfortunately, is a Yisoma. So this is the only parnasa that the family is going to make. All the children have to go out and work. So they send out this young child to the market, and she's being abused, and people keep coming by and stealing apples from her, and she doesn't have anything to do. Finally, one man comes with a big basket of apples, with a big empty basket, and he just starts emptying her whole basket into his, and he's about to run away. And she starts crying, and she says, you know, I'm going to lose all my parnasa. This is why I'm out here. My whole family's going to starve to death. And somebody, a merchant next to her, says, why don't you try to save yourself? Just pick up the rest of the bucket of apples and run away. Whatever you have left, don't let him take everything. I understand he's taken 90% of what you have, but at least whatever you have left, you should take and run. Why are you allowing him to continue to do this? And writes the Chafetz Chaim, sometimes while we're in the middle of davening, we have something that comes away and takes the apples out of our basket. I'm going to steal this bracha away from you. You're not going to have kavana during the first bracha, the second bracha, the third bracha. All of a sudden you wake up slach lanu and you say, oh my goodness, how did I get out of here? Sometimes you wake up modem anachnu lach and you see yourself bowing and you say, how did I flip so many pages? How did I get here already? You've not been paying attention, writes the Chafetz Chaim. You now have two options. All human beings have issues having kavana during tefillah. That's basic human nature. That's what happens. That's what the Yerushalmi writes as well. The Amoraim had trouble with it. But now that you wake yourself up, and it can be by Sim Shalom, says the Chafetz Chaim, you have two options. Option number one is, you can say, you know what, forget it. If I missed all these brachas already, if he stole so much from me, and he didn't give me the opportunity to daven the way I should, let me just give him the rest. Forget about my Shemona Esrei, nothing will ever come of it. Or option B is, you can wake yourself up and say, at least I have two brachas left, at least I have a few apples left, let me pick up my basket and run. Forget about what happened before, now move forward and say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm ready to have a heartfelt tefillah with whatever of it is left, and I'm not going to be disturbed by the fact that so much of it was taken away from me. That was an opportunity I won't get back, but the opportunity that I have now for the remainder of the Shemona Esrei is something that I will not squander. And says the Chafetz Chaim, that should be something that should give us a lot of chizuk. It should be something that should give us a lot of hope that sometimes it's impossible for us to have kavanah throughout the duration of an entire Shemona Esrei, to really think about all the words and understand what it is that we're saying and the relationship we're supposed to be building during davening, but at least allow yourself a small portion of it. At least allow yourself to take or to steal, he says, a little bit, whatever is left, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows you to wake yourself up and realize there's something more to what I'm doing than just the simple casual Shemona Esrei that I've been davening until now. Allow yourself to take advantage of that, and don't let anybody steal even that part of the Shemona Esrei after you realize that there's still a few brachas left that you can have kavana with and that you could connect with the Ribono Shel Olam about.